Gilad Pellion had seen too many people die young to feel that he was, or ever would be, too old to live. His memories came and went in flashes, as though a searchlight had briefly found them in a thick fog. His life had become a series of fragments, and he could no longer recall how the pieces fit together. There were images of his birthplace, Corellia, and Coruscant, his home during his youth. But these were swamped beneath hundreds of other memories of other worlds he had visited throughout the years. These, in turn, were buried beneath thousands of memories of the empty gulfs that separated these planets. He frowned, puzzled. The Battle of Bastion, like the rest of his life, lay in pieces in his mind. The sharpest of these pieces, the most painful, was the image of the destruction of the Star Destroyer Superior, riddled with fires and craters, tumbling to its inexorable and terrible fate in the gas giant below. Shimra had been in almost as bad shape. His last intact memory was of a coral skipper coming in low and fast to ram the bridge. He recalled nothing after that. Pain stabbed through him as though someone had rammed a force pike into his side. He bucked and writhed to try to reposition himself in such a manner that the pain might stop, but nothing seemed to help. Nothing, that is, except for the voice calling out to him. It wasn't necessarily what the voice said, either. Just the distraction it offered. But then the pain closed in again, accompanied now by images of the Yuuzhan Vong's weapons flashing murderously around his ship, and the brilliant, almost blinding explosion of TIE fighters against the night sky. Eventually, these horrific images dissolved back into the blackness, leaving just the scattered pinpoint lights of the galaxy shining against the infinite darkness of space. He had always believed the idea of a galactic empire to be slightly ludicrous, since so much of it was empty space. The planets, moons, and asteroids comprising such an empire were just handfuls of sand thrown into a vast ocean of nothingness. And yet this time, he sensed a difference. The gulfs didn't seem so empty anymore. There was something. Something he couldn't find words to describe. A truth, maybe? Whatever it was, it made it seem as if the galaxy itself was alive. Then, even that began to fade, as darkness crept in at the edges of his vision, taking the pain away, along with everything else that had ever been him. The darkness opened up beneath him, and he fell into it like a stone sinking into the depths of an impossibly deep sea. He could feel fluid all around him and in his lungs, and yet, strangely, he wasn't drowning. Bacta, he managed to think. They've got me in a Bacta tank. Then that voice again, calling to him. Gilad Pellion, it said. Admiral? Can you hear me? He struggled to reply, fighting the darkness that pulled him down like thick tangles of seaweed. All he could manage was a single, choked syllable.
Aye.
Is that you, Admiral? Can you talk to me?
It hurts.
I know, said the voice.
Where?
He wanted to ask where he was, but it didn't seem as appropriate as...
Are you?
I have installed a neural shunt into your inner ear. My voice is coming to you directly through your auditory nerve. Please forgive the intrusion, but we had to take drastic steps to keep you alive.
Who are you?
My name is Tekli, Admiral. I am a healer.
Agony ripped through him like a solar flare, burning every nerve fiber to cinders. Or so it felt.
Are you healing me? He gasped. Or killing me?
The pain is unavoidable. The only way to avoid it now would be for you to die. But you must stay with your body, no matter what it's telling you.
I can't.
Yes, you can, Admiral. We need you. If you die now, many others will follow. I'm not about to let that happen.
He wasn't used to being spoken to that way, as though by an insistent schoolteacher.
You're not.
I'm sorry. There are times when we all must endure the hurt in order to survive. Yours is now.
The Force requires it.
Realization came to him then. The Force. This Tekli was a Jedi. But what was a Jedi doing in the Empire? And where? Another memory came to him. He had spoken to the Skywalkers in Bastion shortly before trying to break out of the gas giant's mass shadow. This Tekli, she must have come with them. But what was he doing here with her? Superior was destroyed. He recalled ordering the evacuation of the dying Hulk as it plunged into the gas giant. How had Shimura avoided the same fate? He should be dead.
You're not dead, Admiral.
Tekli's voice was compassionate but firm.
Just hang in there a little longer, okay?
He gritted his teeth and resigned himself to living a little longer yet. After all, what choice did he have? When Jason felt some of the tension ease in the tiny Chadrafan healer, he leaned forward expectantly.
He fights with us now, she said,
her soft voice barely audible over the mechanical buzzing of the droids assisting her.
He no longer works against us.
You're sure he will live? He asked.
Yes, she said simply.
Her head dropped, and she fell silent again, to devote her attention fully to healing the Grand Admiral of the Imperial Navy. Jason felt subtle movement in the Force around her. He backed away in order to avoid disrupting her concentration further. Pelion had been removed from the Bacta tank, and now lay on his back on the room's operating table, attended by the frigate's 2-1B medical droid, as well as Tekli. His numerous wounds stood out starkly in the harsh white light. Jason could see far more than he actually needed to know that the man before him had come extremely close to death. Under cover of wreckage from the dying Star Destroyer, the frigate had managed to slip away relatively unharmed, although not before a dozen TIE fighters had sacrificed themselves to ensure the Grand Admiral's escape. The commander of the shuttle, who had brought him to Yaga Minor, didn't doubt that it was worth it. For a while, though, it had seemed a meaningless sacrifice, for Pelion had very nearly died anyway. Sizing up the situation in Yaga Minor with admirable speed, the shuttle's commander had contacted Captain Yage rather than his direct superior in the Navy. Yage had ordered the shuttle to dock with Widowmaker immediately to transfer the patient. Tekli and Jason, weighed down by the healer's equipment, had stayed with the Imperial commander while Jade Shadow withdrew to a discreet distance. As soon as Pelion had arrived, wrapped tightly in a life-preserving cocoon, the Chadrafan had gone to work. The pilot of the shuttle, who had brought the Admiral from Bastion, had stayed with him throughout. A lean young man by the name of Vitor Rige, he looked exhausted and drawn. His left arm was clearly injured, but he refused to have any treatment until Pelion was stable, insisting that all attention be focused upon the Admiral. After a few minutes, when it was clear that Pelion's condition was going to continue to improve, the pilot exhaled heavily, gratefully, as if he had been holding his breath the entire time he'd been standing there. He looked over to Jason.
He told me to find you. Before he passed out the last time, he insisted I should find you, Jedi, if you had come here.
Jason frowned. Because he thought we could save him? The man's expression became instantly pinched, as if he was offended by the very notion.
He wanted you to know that we were grateful. If anyone should bear a grudge against the Empire, it would be you. But you helped us, and he appreciated that. We all did. I wouldn't be here now if you hadn't risked your own lives to show us how to fight those...
He fell quiet, biting down on the words. Sensing the man's embarrassment, Jason quietly changed the subject by pointing to the arm that Reed was cradling.
You really should get that looked at, he said.
Vitor Rige nodded his appreciation.
You saved my life, as well as the life of the Admiral. I shall forever be in your debt for that.
Jason wanted to say that he didn't believe in debt, but at that moment, Tekli stepped back from the table and approached the two of them.
I have done all that needs to be done, she said,
her thin shoulders shrugging.
The rest is up to him now, and how he responds to the Bacta.
Jason watched as the medical droids maneuvered Pelion back into the tank. Tekle gathered her equipment to leave. Helping her carry her tools, Jason led her from the infirmary, leaving the droid to tend to Reege. Immediately outside the medical bay, they found Captain Yage pacing back and forth in front of the doors. "He'll live," Jason said. Like a balloon releasing its air, the tension seemed to evaporate from the captain, dissolving her concerned expression. "I didn't think it could be done," she said, dropping her stare to the Chadra fan, standing silently and respectfully beside Jason. "I'm sorry for doubting you. I offer the appreciation of all my people for saving the Admiral's life." The Chadra fan bowed her head.
"He still has some recuperating to do," she said, "but he should be out of the Bacta tank in about 6 standard days.
Yage's expression turned from relief to concern again.
6 days? That's too long.
Why? Jason asked.
As far as the Moths know, she explained, Gilad died in Bastion. Flennick has had time to put himself in power, assuming control of Stalwart and the rest of the fleet. I wouldn't put it beyond him to do anything to avoid having to relinquish that power now he's got it. While Gilad is weak, he is vulnerable, and we can't keep the secret of his survival to ourselves forever.
What will happen when they find out? She shrugged.
I don't know. That'll be up to Moff Flennick and his underlings.
Her comlink bleeped. Listening to the short message, she nodded and answered that she would be there immediately.
I guess we won't have to wait long to find out. We've just received a recall order.
Can't you disobey it? Asked Jason.
If we do, then we're going to have a very good reason.
Perhaps you should let me talk to them, he said.
Your what?
The red face of General Burita glowered at Jason from the Widowmaker's hologram.
A Jedi Knight, sir, Jason repeated steadily. I've come to help you.
Help us?
The overweight general spluttered for a second.
And what exactly makes you think we need your help, Jedi Knight? All I see is an overgrown boy in robes.
Appearances can be deceptive, Jason said, refusing to wilt beneath the general's blustering and outrage.
We don't need your help,
Burita said obstinately.
I think you do.
Jason paced around Widowmaker's cramped bridge, trying his best to radiate a sense of calm control.
Tell me, why do you think the Yuuzhan Vong attacked Bastion?
Burita straightened, the corner of his mouth twitching irritably.
The Yuuzhan Vong attacked us in retaliation.
For?
Jason pressed.
For Garki, Ithor, Exodo 2.
And for supplying information to the New Republic. Specifically, information on hyperspace routes to the Galactic Alliance, which enabled it to turn the tide of the battle and, for the first time, hurt the Yuuzhan Vong. Jason enjoyed the surprised look on Burita's face. On Widowmaker's Bridge, Captain Yage raised her eyebrows.
My mother negotiated that deal with the Empire General. That's how I know about it.
So?
Burita snapped.
What are you driving at, boy? Speak plainly before I have you arrested for obstructing the Imperial war effort.
It's really quite simple, General.
Jason smiled as sweetly as he could. If the deal between the Empire and the Galactic Alliance was such a secret, then how do you think the Yuuzhan Vong ever learned about it? I mean, only your highest-ranking officers and my mother knew about it at the time. She passed it on to our military leaders who employed it in our war effort. We know there's no leak at our end because the new routes worked. The only way, therefore, that the Yuuzhan Vong could have known that the Empire had given the Galactic Alliance information that hurt them is if the leak was at your end. Jason paused before pronouncing his conclusion. You have a spy, General.
Nonsense!
Burita's denial was mixed with just enough shock for Jason to realize that his reasoning had hit home.
That's impossible!
It's not impossible at all.
Jason changed his tone to one of sympathy. The fact is, we've had problems with infiltration ourselves. First with the Yuuzhan Vong, and then with the Peace Brigade. Your staff could be riddled with alien impersonators and sympathizers, and you would never know. They have living disguises called Ooglith Maskers that allow them to impersonate anyone.
We'll conduct security sweeps, random checks,
Burita said. But Jason could tell that the man's self-assurance was flagging. All useless, I'm afraid, unless you know what it is you're looking for.
And you do know what to look for, I suppose.
Jason nodded. My companions and I have had a great deal of experience with the Yuuzhan Vong.
Let's assume I believe you. What next? Are you asking me to open my staff to your influence? How will I know, then, that I'm not trading one form of infiltration for another?
I'm not asking you to do that, General. All I am doing is offering you and the Empire advice. You can take it or leave it. Just give me the opportunity to present it properly, and then you can decide what to do about it.
Precisely what sort of advice are we talking about here?
Jason ticked several items off on his fingers. First, we can advise you on how to detect and eliminate Yuuzhan Vong spies within your ranks. Second, we can teach your pilots new tactics that will help you fight more effectively on the front. And third, I can offer you my opinion of what you should do next. The general grumbled disdainfully.
Which is?
That we should leave Yaga Minor as soon as possible, Jason said. Any spies you have will already have reported to their superiors that this is where the fleet has regrouped. The general grunted.
Anything else?
Only one other thing. We cordially invite you to join the Galactic Alliance to enable a continuation of this dialogue. We could have used your help many times over the course of the war, and I know that you can use ours now. We're not supplying anything with strings attached, General, but we do offer the hand of peace. All we ask is that you at least think about taking it in return. The holographic image of the General was motionless for a long time, long enough for Jason to wonder if the image hadn't frozen. Then Burita moved, tilting his head to one side with a grimace.
I'll get back to you,
he said, before his image abruptly dissolved. Jason let out his breath in a trembling rush, for the first time realizing how damp with perspiration his palms were. I'm not sure if that went better than expected, or worse than I could have imagined. Better, Yage said, stepping up beside him. It's not in that fat fool's nature to negotiate, or to entertain an original thought. So to get him halfway there is something of a major coup. If I know him, he'll already be on the line to Moff Flennick, who'll tell him to stop listening to such nonsense and impound us before we waste any more time. But by the time he acts on it, the situation might have changed. She looked around her bridge, her expression concerned. It really depends on what's happened to the chain of command. Who's filled the power vacuum, you mean? Jason asked. Yage nodded. Exactly. With Shimura still missing, the Moths will assume that Gilad Pelion is dead, but until they know for sure either way, they won't stick their necks out. And Flennick might not make any bold moves until he's certain of how the Council will fall out. If he's got the support, he may even take the opportunity to make a move for leadership. That wouldn't be good. Not for you, no, Yage said. And probably not for our chances of survival. Jason reached deep inside himself, searching for the wisdom of his last teacher's words. The Force is everything, and everything is the Force, Vergère had said shortly before she died. There is no dark side. The Force is one, eternal and indivisible. You need worry about no darkness, save that in your own heart. Not even the darkness of others? He wanted to ask her as he stood listening to Moff Flennick's ranting.
Retreat, the man was growling. Retreat! I hear that word, and I think of cowards. I think of cowards, and I find myself reaching for my blaster.
He paused to fix Jason with a baleful glare, presumably to let him know he wasn't exaggerating.
There's not one man under my command who would accept an order to retreat from me without questioning my sanity.
Moff Flennick, Jason said as placatingly as he could. If you'll just listen to what I have to say.
Ha! Moff Flennick snorted. I'm not stupid, boy. I'm not senile. Who do you take me for?
Finding solace and strength in the memory of Vergere's wisdom, Jason found an island of calm within himself and relaxed his clenched hands. The solidly built man paced the flight deck in full uniform, waiting out Jason's silence with tense energy. I am merely explaining what, to me, would be your most prudent course of action at this moment. How you choose to respond to my opinion, of course, is entirely up to you.
But you won't like it if I ignore you, will you?
If you ignore me, your people will be slaughtered, Jason said softly. And no, I would not like that at all. Flennick hesitated, something approximating amusement flickering behind his keen eyes.
You know, boy, if you were one of my officers, I would have had you shot for speaking to me the way you just did.
Jason fought to maintain calm. Moff Flennick, he started tiredly. The Moff raised a hand to silence Jason.
I have no idea why you're bothering to talk to me, boy. I'm clearly wasting your time. That's what you're thinking, isn't it?
Actually, sir, I don't believe for a second that I'm wasting my time, Jason said. If anything, I think you know that what I'm saying makes sense. But you're just too proud to admit it. You're desperately trying to convince yourself that I'm wrong.
Really?
The word was more of a challenge than a question. You're no fool, sir, Jason said smoothly. Convene the other Moffs if you want to. Tell them what I've told you and see what they have to say. I'd be particularly interested in speaking to Moff Crowell of Valk 7, since she might have access to something I'm looking for.
And what might that be? Asked Flennick.
Jason smiled slightly at the suspicion that suddenly pinched the man's face. Information, of course, he said. Flennick's eyes narrowed.
Then you think Valk 7 would be an ideal fallback position for our fleet when we retreat from Yaga Minor?
Actually, that's the last thing you'd want to do. Valk 7 is on the edge of the unknown regions. No, my choice of fallback, the place you would do best to lay a trap, if you prefer, would be Borusk. The Moff was silent for a long moment. Jason knew what he was thinking. Borusk was one of several small, fortified worlds guarding the edge of the Empire. The Moff would be wondering if this was part of some convoluted plot on behalf of the Galactic Alliance to gain territory from an old enemy. Moff Flennick, if you move quickly enough, you might save Yaga Minor. This got a reaction. Yaga Minor was the Moff's personal holding.
Explain, Flennick demanded.
The Yuuzhan Vong are stretched to the limit right now. Thanks to our hit-and-run campaigns, the forces they've assembled to knock out the Empire are badly needed elsewhere. They can't afford to commit here for too long. Knocking out your fleet quickly is their priority. Wherever it is, they'll go.
So if we send them packing now, Flennick put in, you're saying they won't come back?
Jason shook his head. I can't guarantee that, he said.
And what makes you so sure staging a counterattack at Borusk will work?
Two reasons, Jason replied. One, the spies infiltrating your staff will make sure their war masters know about the move. And two, we'll teach you how to fight the Yuuzhan Vong more effectively.
In exchange for what?
Nothing, actually. My only interest is in saving lives and maintaining the stability of this region. We can haggle over information with Moff Crowell when this matter is resolved. Moff Flennick grunted.
This matter, he echoed incredulously. You make it sound like we're in the middle of a minor squabble over an asteroid.
Please, don't take offense, sir. But from the point of view of the galaxy, that's more or less what this is. The Empire has dominion over a few thousand systems out of hundreds of thousands of millions. Yes, you have tactical significance, and no, I do not like to see lives wasted unnecessarily. But your failure to survive will make little difference in the greater scheme of things. Flenix's face filled with blood. His jowls quivered from the rage building up inside him. Jason had gotten the reaction he'd hoped for. The comm on Flenix's desk buzzed, and the moth vented his anger on it.
I told you, no interruptions!
He bellowed into the comm unit.
But sir, there's an incoming call from...
I don't care who it's from, you fool. Get rid of them now, or so help me, I'll have you ejected into space without...
He stopped short when another voice issued from the comm unit.
That's hardly the way to speak to a subordinate officer, especially when you're on my ship.
Flenix's features went from startlingly purple to deathly white in the time it would have taken light to cross the room.
Grand Admiral, he said unbelievingly. You're alive.
Of course I'm alive,
Pelion said, his voice oddly muffled but clear.
What's the matter, Curlin? You don't sound as overjoyed to hear my voice as I'd thought you'd might.
No, that's not it at all. It's just that is, I'm...
The man stammered awkwardly for a moment, then straightened and returned his glare to Jason. It's nice to hear your voice, Grand Admiral Pelion, Jason said.
Under better circumstances, Jason Solo, I would say the same.
There was the hint of a smile in the man's voice.
Thank you for your help at Bastion. I owe the Jedi my life, and I never forget my debts. You can safely assume I shall listen to your thoughts on the Yuuzhan Vong with far more interest than some of my colleagues.
It would be my pleasure to discuss them with you, sir, Jason said, mindful to keep any conceit from his tone.
Another time, perhaps. I've been a little out of touch these past couple of days, and right now I have a strategic withdrawal to discuss with Moff Flenix.
We were just discussing that very thing, the moth said, licking his lips nervously.
Were you indeed? And have you issued directives to the surviving officers?
Well, no, but,
Assessed possible locations for a more substantial regroup?
Borisk was one location that came to mind,
Flenix said, shooting Jason a warning look.
A good choice, Curlin. I suggest you get onto it straight away. I trust I can leave the arrangements in your hands. I have business elsewhere that needs attending.
Grand Admiral.
Yes, Curlin.
Don't you think this deserves a little more discussion?
There was a long silence. When Pelion spoke again, it was in a voice with all the cold clarity of a hydrogen bath.
Understand this, Curlin. What I just gave you was an order, not an invitation. While I command the Imperial Navy, you will do as I say, regardless of whether or not you agree with those orders. Otherwise, and believe me when I say this, if I have to secede from the Empire in order to ensure this Navy's survival, then I shall do so without hesitation. And I guarantee that we won't be back to pick up the pieces of your shipyards afterward.
I understand, Grand Admiral, the moth stammered.
Good,
Pelion returned crisply.
But I'm not finished. This is just the beginning. You will also issue orders to allow Jade Shadow free access to this system and any system within the Empire. The Moth Council has gravely underestimated the threat of the Yuuzhan Vong against my advice one too many times, and it won't happen again. I won't let it happen again. If we succeed at Borisk, the Galactic Alliance and the Jedi will be our best hope of long-term survival, and I intend to take advantage of them while the Empire still exists. Is that understood?
The large, but temporarily cowed man, just nodded.
The connection must be poor, Curlin, because I didn't quite catch what you said.
I understand perfectly, Grand Admiral Pelion.
Excellent. Now, send our young friend back to Widowmaker. I want to pick his brain about the Yuuzhan Vong while I still have the opportunity to do so.
You did it! Jason found himself enveloped in a hug the moment he stepped off the shuttle's boarding ramp. Taken by surprise, he automatically returned the hug before realizing who was giving it to him. The warm, petite body pressed against his. The hair, the delicate yet very female scent. "I always knew you would," Danny said, pulling away slightly.
"It was Admiral Pelion, really," Jason protested.
"You're just being modest," Danny laughed, playfully punching his shoulder.
Footsteps approaching from the docking bay's main entrance prevented him from responding to this. Danny stepped back, looking embarrassed, as Luke walked around the corner.
"I thought I felt you come aboard," said Jason's uncle, dressed in his customary Jedi robes.
"How long have you been here?" Jason asked both of them.
"Captain Yage sent a shuttle when Galad woke up," Luke explained. "By the time Danny and I arrived, they used his codes to patch into the Imperial security network without being noticed. And from there, eavesdropped on your conversation with Flennick. He insisted on interrupting. I hope you don't mind us doing that. It just seemed simpler this way, and a chance to prove to Flennick that the Empire's Supreme Commander is still alive."
"I'm just relieved that the Admiral came out of this all right," Jason said. "Can I talk to him?"
"That will be up to Tekly," Danny said. "He's still recuperating in the Bacta tank."
The three of them walked unimpeded through the corridors of Widowmaker. They reached the medical bay and were automatically waved through by the stormtrooper guards. Inside, they found Tekly studying reports on her patient's progress, while a weary-looking Captain Yage talked to him. Galad Pelion looked better than when Jason had last seen him, but not as recovered from his injuries as Jason would have liked. He was still immersed in the Bacta tank and looked just as terribly thin and pale as before. He was communicating solely via attachments to his breath mask, which gave his voice the faintly muffled tone Jason had noticed while dealing with Flennick. Pelion opened his eyes to peer through the thick nutrient filling the tank, then closed them again.
"Ah, yes. Skywalker, come to view the relic, have you?"
"Mara reports that ships are moving in ways consistent with the withdrawal you ordered," Luke replied. "The jump points are filling up fast."
"Good."
The Grand Admiral's eyes opened again, fixing directly upon Jason.
"You did well back there, young Solo. But reason and common sense were never going to bring Flennick around. He understands nothing but force, and I'm not talking about the one you Jedi regard so highly either. I'm talking about the brute sort."
His eyes closed once more, as if irritated by the solution.
"Reminding him of his insignificance, unless he joined the greater scheme of things, might have done the trick. But in the end, I'd rather have him angry with me than you. I'm used to it."
"Moff Flennick is someone whose displeasure I wouldn't wish to cultivate, Admiral," Jason said. "But I wouldn't lose any sleep over it either." Pelion laughed.
"Well put, lad. As indeed was your argument back there. If what you say is true, then the Yuuzhan Vong will be sure to strike when we are least able to defend ourselves. They'll want to strike hard and fast like they did in Bastion, and leave us too battered to be of any use to anyone. I doubt they'll be converting our world just yet. They'll come back for those when they have both the time and resources to do so."
"It could be resources thereafter," Danny said, "as well as neutralizing a threat."
"They could get resources from anywhere."
"They don't use them the way we do, Admiral," Danny explained. "They still need planets for their plantations. But that's not what I meant anyway. I was thinking of armies.
Coral skippers and yamisks they might need to grow from scratch, but cannon fodder is much easier to come by."
There was a small silence.
"You're talking about combat slaves. That would explain why they hit Bastion first, not Yaga Minor. And it also explains something else. Arion, that hollow you showed me earlier, put it back up on the screen."
Captain Yage tapped at a keyboard, and instantly one of the monitors displaying Pelion's vital signs was replaced by a patchy view of the Bastion system. The distributions of Imperial and Yuuzhan Vong forces were marked with sweeping schematics containing thousands of minute details. By scrolling the diagram forward through time, Yage could show how the battle had progressed on any number of fronts, as collated from information gleaned by sensors on all the Imperial vessels.
When she reached the point in the analysis she was looking for, Yage froze the image and zoomed in close on one of Bastion's poles. There, designated by a ring dot, was a single ship. "We don't know where this came from," she said. She called up some sketchy schematics. The vessel was shaped like a flattened sphere with five trailing stalks of various lengths.
"If it was a military vessel," Yage concluded, "then why did they wait until the end of the battle to utilize it? But if it wasn't a military vessel, then what's it doing there at all?"
"It has to be a slave carrier,"
Pelion said.
"They wiped out the fleets in orbit around Bastion, and that gave them an entire population ripe for capture. Those who couldn't get away in time are probably already on their way to the nearest processing plant, to be turned into mindless drones, willing to sacrifice themselves for the War Master."
"They've been used in many other places since," Luke said. "In fact, I'm sure that this was the same kind of ship that Saba encountered a few months back at Barab 1. Pelion nodded grimly.
"Citizens of the Empire, all people, deserve better than this. Had we known that this was what they were after..."
"You were outgunned, Admiral," Jason offered. "There was nothing else you could have done."
"Outgunned and poorly organized. Wherever that ship came from, the chances are it's probably hundreds of light years away from us by now. The only thing we can think about now is how to stop it from happening again. At Borisk, or anywhere. To anyone." "Here they come."
Galad Pelion heard the words a split second before he felt a vibration run through Widowmaker as the frigate's ion engines engaged. He reached out to steady himself against the transparent shell containing the healing fluid, trying to concentrate on the good things about his situation. Yes, his injured body was confined to a Bacta tank on an aging frigate during what might possibly be the most important battle he would ever fight, but at least he still had his faculties about him.
"Enemy fleet concentrated in sectors 3 through 8,
said the voice of Widowmaker's duty officer in his ear.
"Changing course to adopt primary position."
Widowmaker swung about to put the planet of Borisk between itself and the incoming Yuuzhan Vong fleet. A relatively small world, it would have been entirely unremarkable, but for its role in the defense of the Empire. The Imperial Navy fleet, now gathered around Borisk, had just enough time to organize into new task forces and squadrons. The losses in Bastion had been high, and the shock enormous, but discipline was still strong among the Corps. There were enough Star Destroyers left to consolidate the defense around 4 distinct battle groups, designated by their command vessel names. Stalwart, which Pelion had not permitted Flennic to retain, had the vanguard of the defense. Relentless and Protector protected the flanks, and the rear was maintained by Right to Rule. There were 5 other Star Destroyers committed to the defense of Borisk, making 9 altogether. Pelion felt an old excitement rise in him as he watched the battle groups deploy. That moment immediately prior to battle was simultaneously the most wonderful and the most terrifying. Stalwart sent 4 TIE fighter squadrons to engage the lead ships, while they were still recovering from the hyperspace jump. Pelion counted 2 enemy warships at the head of that particular attack. Giant ovoids, as long as a Star Destroyer, with huge coral arms near the nose that sprouted coral skippers like pollen. There were 3 carrier analogs toward the rear, also branched and budded with coral skippers. These were accompanied by numerous gunships, capable of spraying volleys of plasma at anything daring to come too close. Dozens of Yuuzhan Vong fighters launched to intercept the Imperial forces, spewing plasma. Led by Luke Skywalker in his XJ-3 X-Wing, the TIE squadrons were equipped only with lasers, so stutter fire was not possible. Instead, they attacked 2 or 3 at a time, the multiple laser fire having a similar effect and overloading the Dovin bases of the skips. Surprised, clearly expecting less efficient resistance, the Yuuzhan Vong warriors began to scatter, either destroyed outright or repulsed. It wasn't long, though, before the war coordinators in the capital ships reassessed the situation and increased the muscle behind the push into the system.
Fall back, Skywalker,
Pelion ordered through the comlink in his breath mask.
I'm going to stay out here a while longer, Gilad,
came the reply.
Just you be careful, Luke.
He heard Mara pipe up from the Jade Shadow, where she and Danny waited on the sunward flank with Protector. The healer was on Widowmaker with the giant lizard and himself, a half-dead old man who was supposed to be running the show. If the situation hadn't been so serious, Pelion might have found the whole thing seriously amusing.
How's Jason coming along?
Luke asked.
He's getting results,
Mara said. Her grim tone prompted Pelion to take a look. Jason Solo, the boy Jedi who had come so delightfully close to besting Moff Flennick, was on right to rule. In the hours since regrouping at Yaga Minor, thousands of mouse droids had been modified with the Yuuzhan bomb-detecting algorithms the Galactic Alliance had developed and sent scuttling from ship to ship throughout the fleet, identifying three Yuuzhan bomb infiltrators. In analyzing the communications these infiltrators had received from within the fleet, Jason had been able to expose more than a dozen sympathizers. None had been confronted directly, but all had been posted to the right to rule and individually summoned to a staffing meeting with the intention of seeing their activities brought to an immediate end. Jason had set up the meeting in a conference room that looked perfectly innocent, but had in fact been heavily modified with some of the most sophisticated security devices the Empire had to offer, via which Pelion was able to follow the proceedings over the monitor set up in his room. The traitors arrived one by one, staggered at two-minute intervals to ensure that they wouldn't meet in the corridor outside and suspect the trap they were walking into. Jason sat patiently at the front of the room, saying nothing as each one entered. The disguised aliens were the last to enter. The first came into the room a full 5 minutes after all the traitors had been seated. She breezed easily in, noting those seated around the large table in a single glance. Her expression was unreadable, and so human that Pelion could scarcely credit that it wasn't in fact her real face, but rather an example of the biotechnological masks the Yuuzhan Vong called Ooglith Maskers. She was, to all appearances, a tall, plain woman with long gray hair tied back in a severe bun, with nothing remarkable about her at all. Greetings, Fuela Blay, Jason said from the front. Won't you take a seat while we wait on the arrival of the others? The woman glared at him, but did as she was asked without comment. Pelion noticed the beginnings of fear in the eyes of four of the spies as they recognized the leader of their particular resistance cell. What's going on here? One of them demanded. You've been called here so we can have a little chat, Jason went on. That's all. Fine, another said sharply. This one wore the uniform of an intelligence coordinator. Then let's get on with it, shall we? When we're all here, Jason said calmly. The door opened at this point, and the second of the Yuuzhan Vong entered, this time in the disguise of a portly corporal, seconded from the Relentless. He, too, hesitated when he saw the group gathered before him, but like Fuela Blay, he kept his expression tightly controlled. What is the meaning of this? He asked. All will be explained, Jason said, pointing to an empty seat. Please sit. The tension within the room mounted as everyone waited uncomfortably for the last of the infiltrators to arrive. Nothing was said, but the body language of those around the table spoke volumes. Finally, the door hissed open, and the third Yuuzhan Vong walked in. An enormous man with shoulders as wide as a Wookiee's, Torvin Exon, took in the scene instantly, his expression breaking into a snarl as soon as his eyes fell upon Jason.
Jedi, he hissed. I can smell you!
A number of those seated started to stand as Torvin Exon's skin peeled away from his face, revealing the scarred and snarling visage of the Yuuzhan Vong beneath. The skin covering his chest and arms rippled, and suddenly there was an amphistaff in his hands. Jason took a step back toward the podium. There's no need for this, he said. Nobody need to be harmed. But even as he spoke,
The Yuuzhan Vong let loose an unintelligible roar and launched himself at Jason. Almost inaudible beneath the alien's deafening war cry was the distinctive snap hiss of Jason's green-bladed lightsaber extending. He brought it up between them in a bright blur, sweeping in an arc to deflect the intended blow to his neck from the ampi-staff. Ampi-staff and lightsaber clashed as the two other spies burst out of their disguises and joined the fray. Realizing they had been discovered, the human sympathizers fell about in a panic. Any thought that the enemy still had the upper hand was soon dispelled when the door burst open and the squadron of stormtroopers filed in, the snouts of their blasters trained on the aliens. A quick succession of shots brought down two of the Yuuzhan Vong infiltrators. The final warrior fell when he raised his ampi-staff high into the air in readiness to bring it down on Jason's head, and the young Jedi proved to be too fast. Thrusting his own weapon up high, he managed to block the Yuuzhan Vong strike when the warrior had barely started the downward swing, then seemingly effortlessly brought his lightsaber down onto the Yuuzhan Vong's torso. Jason stepped back from the smoking corpse of Torvin Exon, wiping a forearm across his sweat-beaded face as he turned to the panic-stricken traitors clustered together away from all the fighting. The cold-eyed intelligence coordinator took a step forward. "Jedi scum," he said, spitting on the floor at Jason's feet. "You've only delayed the inevitable." "Permanently, I hope," Jason said, unflustered. With a gesture from Jason, more stormtroopers filed into the room to take the prisoners away for interrogation. The young Jedi sagged back into a chair when everyone had gone, pulling back the sleeve of his robe to speak into a wrist comm link. "Mission accomplished," he announced tiredly.
"Well done, Jason,"
Mara Skywalker said from Jade Shadow.
"Are you all right?"
Pelion watched on as the Solo boy examined the back of his hand. "Just a nick," he said. "I'll be fine."
"Requesting permission to fall back behind the mine rings, Grand Admiral,"
Captain Yage interrupted. Pelion switched to a general command channel.
"Commence fallback. And remember, we're playing a waiting game. The more we can bleed them, the more they'll hurt."
A series of affirmatives returned over the line. With no Yuuzhan Vong infiltrators left among the Imperial forces, Pelion felt sure that the fallback of his fleet would appear as an unruly retreat to the rigid-minded War Master behind the attack. He was confident that the fully charged turbolasers and cannons waiting for them down on Borosk below would convince the Yuuzhan Vong of their mistake. Then, at last, the battle proper could truly begin. Saba hissed as a slave carrier appeared on the edge of the scope, emerging from the planet's atmosphere. Captain Yage looked up. "What is it?" The Barrible pointed at the screen. The carrier had come out of hyperspace well back from the front and was lightly protected. Its tentacles whipped at vacuum like hungry space slugs snapping for food. Where it had been a flattened sphere before, it was now fatter.
"Fuller," Saba thought. "They are confident of success," she said.
"Maybe they have cause to be confident," Yage said grimly.
"This one can feel them," Saba said,
closing her eyes and reaching out through the Force, past the many nearby life sources that comprise the planet of Borosk and the massed navy of the Empire, and beyond the empty gulf of the attacking Yuuzhan Vong. She felt a concentrated scar in the Force, a scar that itched from pain and fear. She sensed suffocation, imprisonment, claustrophobia, darkness. All the things she had failed to notice when her own people had been taken because of the emotions of anger and rage she had been unable to control.
Hunt the moment.
The people inside the carrier had been stuffed in like animals being taken away for slaughter. The chances were that many of them would die before they ever reached their destination.
"This one would speak to Jade Shadow," she said to Yage.
The captain frowned uncertainly, but made arrangements with her comm officer. "Over there," she said, pointing to an empty comm station. Conscious of the eyes of the crew upon her, possibly the most obvious non-humanoid many had seen up close for years, Saba moved to the station and spoke softly into the link.
Mara, this one has a plan.
There was a slight delay before Skywalker answered.
You have my attention, Hisser.
Do you see the slave carrier? This is the prize. If they lose this, the battle will be hollow for them.
You're saying we should take it out? Saba, we can't do that.
We do not destroy it. This one wishes to liberate it.
There was an even longer silence this time.
Wait a second,
Mara eventually said.
I'm going to patch you into the command ring.
The holoprojectors flickered into life, revealing the faces of Mara and Grand Admiral Pelion. Saba moved to allow Captain Yage to take the seat.
Did I just hear right?
Pelion asked.
Saba wants to free the people trapped in that slave ship,
Mara said.
And what do you think of that?
The Grand Admiral asked.
I think that's a worthy objective,
Mara said. The aging Imperial nodded, sending wisps of thin white hair swaying in the fluid around him.
So, how would it be done?
He asked.
It's on the other side of the Yuuzhan Vong fleet.
Exactly, Saba said. Attention is forward, on the attack. The rear will be vulnerable.
We'd still have to get past their interdictors,
Mara pointed out.
And it wouldn't stay vulnerable long. There are an awful lot of capital ships out there. An assault party would soon find itself surrounded, Saba, a long, long way from backup. And they won't bring it forward until they are certain we've lost,
Luke said, inserting himself into the conversation via the comm unit.
Could that be the way?
Pelion asked.
We're on the retreat anyway.
Too risky, Yage said. We'd have to basically give them Borusk before they'd believe us, and there's no guarantee we'd ever get it back. Pelion nodded again, and Saba received the distinct impression that he was treating the discussion more as a theoretical exercise than a serious proposal. Although she also sensed that he would like someone to make it work.
We require a sacrifice, and we must deliver it directly to the target.
I don't understand, Yage said, turning slightly to look up at the Barabo leaning over her.
They will guess that we know what the slave ship is. Perhaps that is why they have produced it so early in the battle. They use it to enrage us, to challenge our honor. They are saying you are slaves already. It's only a matter of time.
Saba's blunted claws unsheathed at the insult.
We attack it as they are daring us to.
But if they are daring us, then that means they'll be expecting us to respond,
Mara said.
Yes, and we will lose.
I think I'm beginning to follow you, Yage said. We send in some sort of assault ship to take on the slave carrier. It gets knocked out of the picture, but not before acting as a diversion for another attack, right?
No, Saba said. It is the attack. If the ship is not utterly destroyed, its crew will be bounty. They will not waste it.
Pelion chuckled through his breath mask.
Emperor's ears, are you suggesting what I think you're suggesting? You don't mean sacrifice. You mean bait.
From the inside,
Saba said, nodding enthusiastically.
This one will be best placed to take over the ship. It is not a warship, after all. It is a glorified freighter. At worst, disabling it will allow the cargo to be unloaded more easily.
That's the next problem, Yage said. Where does that happen?
Right there,
Mara said.
When Saba has killed the ship's brain, it's just a matter of getting the captive somewhere safe.
This one is thinking of an old trick played on Barab One, Saba said. The best way to poison a bone crusher is to feed it live hikaka that has eaten poisoned vist. The Bone Crusher does not taste the poison until its meal is over. And then it is already dead.
The Grand Admiral's expression sobered.
If you succeed, it'll be the wildest stunt I've ever seen. And you'll seal the gratitude of the Empire forever. Luke, I presume you'll want to be involved, Mara.
Master Skywalker said, ignoring the concerned whistle from R2-D2.
Jade Shadow would make an ideal poisoned Vist,
she said.
And it has a tractor beam that I know will come in handy. You can count me in too,
said Danny, her head appearing over Mara's shoulder. Pelion's eyes were dancing behind the translucent shell of his visor.
If we're going to do this, then let's get moving. Every minute delayed is another minute my pilots are out there getting killed.
The hulking mass of an old Katana-class dreadnought lumbered out of Borosk's lower orbits, where it had been lurking unnoticed since the beginning of the battle. Reclaimed and refitted with centrally computerized slave rigging units, it operated with a bare minimum of crew. Even so, its sluggish hyperdrive and weak shields had left such vessels sorely outclassed by more recent ships, and Saba was surprised to see one still operating. She wasn't the only one. That heap of junk isn't going to get us very far, Mara had said upon seeing it.
That's exactly what you're supposed to think,
Pelion had replied over the comm. By then, Saba had changed ships and changed into one of the brown, lightly armored jumpsuits that had become standard for Jedi Knights going into close combat with the Yuuzhan Vong ever since the mission to the world ship orbiting Merkur. Danny Kui had also slipped into one and was sitting nervously with Saba as they listened in on the discussion about the ship that would ferry them into position.
I've been saving it for a suicide strike,
the Grand Admiral had gone on to explain.
It's designed to die twice. The first time, what the enemy sees is selective field failures and shaped charges designed to make it look like the engines have failed. Then, when it looks like it's adrift in vacuum, it comes back to life and takes everyone by surprise.
You hope, Mara had put in wryly. Pelion had shrugged in his tank.
That's the plan, anyway. We've never had cause to use it before.
The difference between a fake death and a real one is slim, Mara had commented.
I'm aware of that. That's why the crew complement has been reduced to the bare minimum. We found some old combat droid brains mothballed in storage. This ship is pretty much capable of flying itself to the target, maintaining a convincing semblance of attack, keeping its crew alive while the outer shell dies, then commencing the second covert operation in accordance with new instructions. Ordinarily, we'd crew it with a squadron of TIE fighters and some troopers, blow the shell when surprise can be maximized, then retreat if possible. But I'm sure we can make room for other cargo.
On the way in, Saba knew other cargo meant Jade Shadow and a reduced TIE fighter contingent. If all went according to plan, the dreadnought, originally Braxent Brave, but hastily renamed Braxent Bone Crusher in honor of her plan, would cram its empty heart with liberated slaves. A rapid repressurization unit had been installed at one end of the massive space. Jade Shadow's tractor beam would help capture the slave carrier and its contents. Force fields would keep the air and cargo in long enough for the ship to jump to safety, while Jade Shadow and the fighters covered its back. That was the plan, anyway.
All in place,
came Jason's voice over the secure comlink.
Ready for you to dock, Aunt Mara.
Jade Shadow's thrusters fired to jockey it into the same orbit as Bone Crusher. Jason had wanted to be involved in the mission as soon as he'd heard about it. Pelion, however, had advised against it.
You should stay behind,
the Grand Admiral had said.
That's where a responsible leader belongs.
Jason had seemed mystified by this.
But I'm not leading anyone. One day you will,
Pelion had said.
And you owe it to those who follow you to be there for them, both during and after a campaign.
While Jason obviously appreciated the Grand Admiral's confidence in him, he still did not want to be left behind. In the end, he had eventually forced a compromise. He would be the human brain behind the droid mines during Bone Crusher's elaborate ruse, hidden away inside the dreadnought shell, where it was safe, and from where he was currently directing the operation. A series of deep clangs announced that Jade Shadow had passed through the flight deck's fake inner hull and docked with the heavy grapnels designed to withstand the shaking the dreadnought would receive during the early stages of its mission. Over Mara's shoulder, Saba could see two rows of closely packed TIE fighters cradled in cushioning energy nets.
"Breaking orbit," Jason said. "Heading for the jump point." "Fly well, Braxton Bone Crusher,"
came Grand Admiral Pelion's voice over the comm.
"We'll keep them as busy as we can for you down here."
"Thanks, Galad," Mara said. Saba felt a stirring through the Force, as though Luke and his departing wife were communicating in private. And then there was nothing but silence. Her connection with the living universe was gone. They were on their way.
"First jump engaged," Jason said.
"Trim. Optimal,"
interceded a droid voice, deep, but with jarring nasal overtones. The voice of the droid brains doing the job normally done by thousands of crew.
"Projection optimal. All systems optimal.
ETA?
7.53 standard minutes. Perfectly optimal."
"I don't suppose above optimal is an option, is it?"
Jason asked. "Good question," Mara said, pushing her hair back from her face as she leaned back into her molded flight seat. "If we could shave off a few seconds, that could only be a good thing."
"Anything other than optimal would be wasteful,"
the droid replied. "I can't help wishing we had a few of Lando Calrissian's YVH droids here to lend us a hand," Danny said, as she looked up from adjusting the webbing of her pack. "You're not the only one," Mara said sourly. "They might show those SD brains that they got more to worry about than being precisely on schedule. Obsolescence is a terrible thing for a droid, you know?" Jason chuckled, but the droid remained silent. Saba hissed again and settled back to wait, her claws retracted and tail relaxed, to all appearances, a perfect example of Jedi patience. Only another Barrable would have recognized the signs of nervousness she was actually displaying, the slight stiffness to the scales down her back, and the restless extension and retraction of her inner eyelids. Not even her Jedi training could completely remove her anxieties. Hunt the moment. Not far from Jade Shadow, Jason Solo's thoughts were very much focused on the present, not the future. In the minutes remaining till the end of the jump, there was so much to do. Systems to familiarize himself with, droid brains to program, decoy strategies to scrutinize, along with innumerable other checks to be made on an unfamiliar system. Sealed in the cockpit of a flightless TIE fighter that was in turn wrapped in an energy web dense enough to stop a comet, all of it huddling inside the belly of Braxton Bonecrusher with Jade Shadow and numerous TIE fighters, he was electronically patched into the mind of the Dreadnought and able to oversee its every move. The seconds ticked by as he continued his last-minute checks. The chores were complicated, but they only occupied the analytical part of his brain. Another part, the more intuitive section that he usually assigned to the understanding of his place in the Force, turned to Danny and Saba in Jade Shadow. Danny's nervousness touched him deeply. She didn't have a lightsaber or a full Jedi's training in the Force. She would essentially rely on Saba throughout this mission into the belly of the slave ship. But she was still going, and her courage made him like her even more. He vividly remembered the moment they had shared while waiting for Captain Yage to board Jade Shadow. There had been something there, a connection of some kind. Had that been the result of boredom, he wondered? Or was it evidence of larger, genuine feelings? When the mission was over, he would have to examine the situation more closely.
"Jump complete,"
the droid brain announced, snapping him out of his reverie. "Halfway there," Jason said. His fingers flew over the controls, calculating, then laying in the second jump.
"That sounds just optimal,"
Mara said from the cockpit of Jade Shadow, not far from where he was sitting.
"Correct,"
the droid brain said.
They hadn't been programmed to recognize sarcasm. Jason's course matched that of the droid brain. On our way, he informed the passengers of Jade Shadow. We'll be there soon.
In 7.47 standard minutes,
the droid brain informed them.
Tactical circuits engaged. TIE decoys ready for launch. Shield generators programmed. Hull detonators primed.
Here we go, Jason said over the comlink. Hang on. This is going to be rough.
5 seconds,
the droid brain announced.
Status optimal. 3, 2, 1.
The white of hyperspace streaked and became stars as the dreadnought barreled back into real space with all the subtlety of an asteroid. Sensors swept the immediate area, searching for the slave ship. Once it was found, almost exactly where predicted, the dreadnought's cannons and batteries locked on and began firing at the tentacles. At the same time, the squadron of decoy TIE fighters launched from the flight deck and swooped in to attack. This was a crucial phase in the operation, and Jason couldn't help but feel anxious. The attack had to be stiff enough to convince the Yuuzhan Vong that it was a serious threat, but not so stiff that it would seriously damage the slave ship. The last thing they wanted to do was burst it open and destroy its contents. But there seemed to be little danger of doing that. The slave freighter was armored against attack, and its tentacles were tough. It wasn't equipped with plasma guns to defend itself, and its Dovin basals weren't responding the same way as those on combat vessels. But coral skippers soon launched from nearby vessels and powered hard to intercept the attack. Two TIE fighters were destroyed almost instantly when the skips arrived. Another three fell within the following minute. The remainder of the fighters managed to cripple one of the slave ship's tentacles, while Bone Crusher dispatched three coral skippers using the random stutter technique Jason had programmed into the droid gunners. For a brief moment, it looked like they might hold out longer than anticipated. But then, fortune's tide turned, and the TIE fighters were destroyed with deadly precision. Barely had the burning cloud of wreckage dissipated when the attack turned on the dreadnought itself, pounding it from every direction. Skips swooped around it, firing round after round into its shields. Explosions rocked the ship as one by one the shields were permitted to fail. The steady thrum of Bone Crusher's generator stuttered as the dreadnought's course began to twist back upon itself. That was all the encouragement the Yuuzhan Vong needed. Sensing the kill, they sent streams of plasma fire into the weakened points along the hull. Quad batteries exploded. Deflector shield projector bays burst into flames as air leaked out of decompressing decks. The dreadnought's rounded, almost beaked nose burst open as though its command decks had been breached. Artificial gravity failed along with the remaining drives. Then, the reserve power generators took a direct hit, blowing an enormous hole in the side of the ship, venting air and even more debris into the vacuum. Then, it was over. Generators shut down. And, since Jason was there to bring them back when required, the SD droid brains shut down with them. Something groaned deep and long as the dreadnought settled into a state of inactivity.